Simpsons fan, and who isn't? You can binge on all 552 episodes. That's 276 hours if you tune to the FXX Network for its two-week marathon that started this morning. The Simpsons is TV's longest-running scripted entertainment series, and it's been praised for many things, including its cast of memorable characters, its hilarious dialogue and storylines, its satiric observations on just about all facets of American life and pop culture. For example, here's the Simpsons parody of Garrison Keillor and A Prairie Home Companion.
Well, sir, it has been an uneventful week in Badger Falls, where the women are robust, the men are pink-cheeked, and the children are pink-cheeked and robust.
What the hell's so funny?
At the Apple Biscuit Cafe, where the smiles are free, don't you know? Spinningquist studied the menu, and finally he ordered the same thing he has every day.
Maybe it's the TV.
But TV, be more funny!
Well, sir, I think it is time to turn this pledge drive over to Troy McClure. I can't keep up this pace forever.
Well, there's more where that came from. Let me introduce our three guests. David Biancooley joins us here in our Philadelphia studio, TV critic for Fresh Air with Terry Gross, founder and editor of TVWorthWatching.com. And David, always a pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Always a pleasure to be
here. We steal you from Fresh Air from time to time. Also joining us is Karma Waltonen. And she's a self-proclaimed Simpsonologist, a lecturer at UC Davis's writing program, co-author of the Simpsons in the Classroom, and beginning the learning experience with the wisdom of Springfield. And Karma, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And also with us is Michael Price. He's writer and co-executive producer of The Simpsons, a job he's had since 2003. And Michael Price, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have you here. And what do you think, I'll start with you, Michael Price, what do you think explains the longevity and the success of The Simpsons?
Wow, you know, it's, I don't know. Well, I think that, you know, the first thing, it's animated, you know, so we have so many characters that we can write for, so many places we can go, so many stories. That's just part of it, I guess. You know, I think that this show started back really fortuitous time for animation, you know, for a new network, the Fox network that was brand new, fairly new, you know, 1989. Well, actually, it began on the Tracy Ullman show,
a series of
you know, interstitials. So the Fox network was really hungry for something new and fresh. They gave the creators of the show, you know, Matt Groening and Jim Brooks and Sam Simon, carte blanche to pretty much do whatever they wanted without a whole lot of interference from people at networks who tend to tell you what to do or how to change things. And they just assembled this amazing group of writers to put the show together, and they got the ball rolling, and
it works.
It worked. It just kept working, and thank God people still seem to like to watch it, and we're just so thrilled that it keeps going. And I think that there was a time, I mean, I'm trying to remember that time. It was so long ago, way back in the, you know, the Pleistocene era or whatever, that, you know, the comedy landscape was a little dire. There was some stuff, there was some good stuff, you know, Cheers and so on, and but it was, you know, Saturday Night Live was still pretty good in those days, and still pretty good now, but I think that there was just a... there was just like a need.
I mean, it sounds like
really smart comedy.
Sounds like right time, right place for The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Hold on one second. Let me just get Karma in on the conversation, then I'll go to David as well. Karma, you are a self-proclaimed Simpsonologist, mm-hmm. and you teach this stuff. So what do you think explains this success?
Well, I think that Michael is definitely right, that it was filling a need. But along with that need, it was also a great innovator. It was a sitcom without a laugh track. I mean, if you remember back, even Scooby-Doo and the Flintstones had a laugh track, as if there were a live audience watching that. And when you have a laugh track, you actually slow down the pace of the jokes. because you're kind of not trusting your audience to get it. So when they introduce this show without one of those, the jokes are able to come faster. For me, I know that one of the things that really drew me to it, and I was a teenager at the time, was I was watching a family that seemed a lot more like mine, a family that watched TV during dinner, and a family that had fights, and a family that did those things. And that was such an interesting take when what else was on the air was The Cosby Show, you know, where the parents are perfect and the children have problems that you can solve in just a couple minutes with a sit-down talking to kind of thing. So you get that, and then you also get the blending of, you know, high and low comedy, and you get satire in sitcom format. We had satire on Saturday Night Live at that time, but we really didn't have it in the rest of TV. And so not only was it giving us great comedy at a time when, yeah, TV wasn't that great, but it was giving us a family we could relate to, and then it was giving us all of these innovations that, quite frankly, it took a long time for the rest of TV to adopt even some of those.
Well, let me, I'm going to pick up on a couple of those things, but let me give you, David, a chance to weigh in as well.
It's just such a funny program. When I was a kid, Rocky and Bullwinkle was the cartoon show that spoke to me, and between that and Mad Magazine, I think it warped everybody who's about my age in just the
right
directions.
I'm nodding vigorously here, yes.
And now, I think that for the last generation, it's been The Simpsons. I mean, when Karma teaches The Simpsons, her students who are 20, 22, whatever they are, 18 to 22, they've already done the reading. They've known The Simpsons their whole lives. You know, there aren't that many educational experiences you can have like that. And it's my first time talking to Michael, and I wanted to salute him because there's this old thing that only the first few years of The Simpsons were brilliant, and then no. If you keep watching, there's always something really good. So Michael, I'm guessing from your tenure, you were involved in the Go to Israel show, the Go to Iceland show, the Lego show. Those, to me, are modern, brilliant pieces.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yes, I wrote all three of those, every word of them. No. I was involved. Yeah, we're so proud. We're super proud of the show, and we work really, really hard, you know, to come up with new stories and new ways of doing things and new ways of finding ways to mine jokes and find new ways of observational humor about what's going on today. And I think that's one reason, too, why the show continues on beyond, is that because we are satirical, you know, we are a sitcom, like you said, Karma, and we're a family show, but I think at the same time, you know, we're attempting and we try to be sort of satirical and find a way to sort of make fun of what's going on in the world at the time that the show is being written. So we're still finding stories that have to do with things that are going on right now. So we're doing a story coming up next season that's about the sort of anti-bullying trend that's going on, which is good, you know, in terms of, and it sort of has an effect on the three bullies, Jimbo, Dolphin, Kearney, who are always picking on, and Nelson, who are always picking on Bart, and finding new ways to do things. We're doing a story coming up this season that we just saw a nearly complete version of, that has to do with fracking and Mr. Burns being involved in doing some fracking underneath the Simpsons house.
Oh, you go. So. Wow, that's great.
Hooray.
I want to tell you, it's very, very pro-fracking.
Well. Let me just
we're still trying out there to sort of figure out ways to sort of have some fun and what's going on in the world right now.
Well, I'm going to go back to the beginning, actually go back to one of David Biancooley's very early reviews on Fresh Air, and this was the premiere episode of The Simpsons, and we're going to hear a little clip of David's intro on Fresh Air and some of the clip as well, so let's give it a listen.
In the premiere episode, Bart gets in trouble for drawing graffiti on the school building. And it looks like there's more trouble ahead when the teacher passes out an IQ test to Bart's class.
Bart, I hope you won't bear some sort of simple-minded grudge against me. I was merely trying to fend off the desecration of the school building.
Eat my shorts.
Pardon?
No, I don't want you to worry, class. These tests will have no effect on your grades. They merely determine your future social status and financial success, if any.
The test results, though, make everyone treat Bart a little differently.
Mr. and Mrs. Simpson, this is our district psychiatrist, Dr. J. Lauren Pryor.
What do we need a psychiatrist for? We know our kid is nuts.
Oh, on the contrary, I have some very exciting news for all of us.
This aptitude test we administered this morning has revealed that the young Bart here is what we call a gifted child.
A what?
Your son is a genius, Mr. Simpson.
Bart? This lunkhead?
Impossible.
No, no, we're quite certain. The child is not supposed to know his own IQ, of course, but you can see it's beyond the range of any doubt.
912?
No, you have it upside down. It's 216.
Before you can say gifted child, Bart is carted off to a special school, given special treatment at home, and even allowed to stay up late for an evening at the opera, which he enjoys about as much as his dad does.
And again, a clip of David Bianculli, not on helium, but, yeah, but just a much younger David Bianculli reviewing the first episode of the Simpsons for Fresh Air. And perhaps because I'm a radio person, to me, and perhaps I can even put this to you, Michael Price, to me, this show is about the voices. I mean, we heard in those clips the sort of variety of voices, the personality of those voices. They are so distinctive. Can you speak to that?
Yes. Well, we are so blessed with just the most amazing cast of actors, you know, who have all been with the show since day one or even before day one, because Julie Kavner and Dan Castellaneta were part of the cast of the Tracy Ullman show. You know, with you know, Dan, Julie, Nancy Cartwright, Yardley Smith, Hank Azaria, Harry Shearer, Tress MacNeil, just incredible.
Don't answer that.
People. just an amazing cast, and just listen to that clip just now you just played. I heard, you know, Harry on there, and Dan, and you know, Nancy, of course, and Julie, and they're just so versatile. They're so amazing. They're great comedians. They're great actors. They're just incredible, and they elevate the material just far above what we put on the page. And you know, congratulations to Harry Shearer. He won an Emmy the other night at the Creative Arts Emmy. So he's, I think now the entire cast of the show, the entire main cast of the show, have all won Emmys for their work. So,
oh, that's great.
Congratulations.
Indeed. Carmen, do you want to, about a minute before our first break here, do you want to talk a bit about, I mean, the voices as you hear them?
Oh, well, when I teach the class, I often show very early episodes, and then the students don't remember when they sounded that way, because it took, you know, a couple episodes for the voice to really settle as we did that. But the actors are amazing. I've actually had the privilege of watching the voice actors do the recording, and there was a joke actually that got cut out of the episode that I watched where Homer had to make a sound that was both a burp and a sneeze. And I was watching that actor, yeah, and because that's what the direction was, and what the line cue was, and so it took a couple takes, and then he made this sound, and the entire sound booth just roared with laughter. It was absolutely amazing, and that's after watching him playing about four different characters, and he would just switch between them with no breaks at all.
Well, let's let's take this real quick. We'll get back to our conversation. We are celebrating The Simpsons. That's Karma Waltonen. Also with us, David Bianculli and Michael Price. And we want to hear from you about some of your favorite episodes, characters. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at Marty Moss Cohen. We'll be right back.
1812 Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Tickets are available for Alan Ayckbourn's Intimate Exchanges, starring Jennifer Childs and Anthony Lawton. A part of the 2014 Philadelphia Fringe Arts Festival, Intimate Exchanges features eight possible outcomes and puts the audience in charge of the story. This award-winning comedy plays August 28th through September 21st at the Arcadia Stage in Arden Theater in Old City. Tickets and info at 1812productions.org.
Runoff from fertilizer recently made Toledo's water undrinkable. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll explain how you can help be part of the solution instead of the problem when you feed your cool season lawn this fall. Plus, answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. and noon, right here on WHYY-FM.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
They will blow up, fix up, soldier up, and learn what it means to be Army strong.
A promotional video from the U.S. Army, which is downsizing but still recruiting. We'll speak to a general in charge of bringing in new soldiers next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about The Simpsons. Why? Because the FXX Network is running a marathon. All of the episodes, that adds up to 276 hours, in fact, began at 10 o'clock this morning. And there's also part of this is a launch of Simpson World app, and that's an app that will provide a searchable database. And let me say that you'll be hearing some Simpsons clips on Radio Times when we talk about politics and religion and foreign policy. Let me play another clip from The Simpsons, and we've pulled out some Simpsons clips having to do with NPR, and this is Lisa listening to This American Life.
I'm just gonna chill out with a little This American Life.
I'm Ira Glass. Remember when you were 5 years old, putting ketchup on your hot dog? Today, in five acts, condiments. Act one, mustard. Act two, mayo. Act three, relish. Act four, corn relish.
That's great. What can I say? That's just great stuff. Talking with David Biancooley, Karma Walton, and to Michael Price. David, you said something really interesting yesterday on Fresh Air when they did a whole hour on The Simpsons about what it's like to watch it, even during this marathon, knowing that other people are watching it, even if you're watching it alone in your home. Help us understand how you see that communal experience.
Well, I have, as a TV critic, I have the DVD sets. So I've got them stacked up, as many as The Simpsons has released to this point. And when this show finally ends, I don't know if the technology will still exist to have a giant mammoth set anymore, or if you'll buy your own Simpson cloud. But I don't pull those off and watch them unless I'm showing them to classes,
right,
or quoting in an article. But when they're on television, I will watch these marathons. I'll have it as a default mode TV station for like a week and a half. And I get sucked in by movies like Jaws and All the President's Men, and I get sucked in. Right now I'm watching the Doctor Who marathon. At least I was until now. Now that The Simpsons has started, that's pretty much it for 10 days.
But I wonder, too, and we're talking about a series that's been on for, 25 years. Do you think, and perhaps, I don't know if you're going to take too much credit for this or not, Michael Price, but we seem to be in a golden age of television today. Do you think The Simpsons had anything to do with that?
Well, I would. I mean, I think that, you know, like Karma mentioned, too, that I think once The Simpsons came, it was such a huge success, such a huge phenomenon, that the nature of the television business is to try to imitate what's working. So I think that in a good way, that it gave networks and comedy people, the studios, like the freedom to sort of say, let's try to do more like that. So the first thing, there were some imitation animation shows that didn't work very well. There was one called Fish Police, and there was one called Capital Critters.
Wow.
Less said about them, the better. But then in terms of just comedy in general, I think there's a lot of people, like David also mentioned, you know, there's people now who were young, you know, young comedy writers who are coming up, who were, you know, were just sort of raised with The Simpsons and the Simpsons style of humor that we see it in all over the comedy landscape. You know, 30 Rock, I believe Tina Fey has even said, you know, this sort of, in a way, like a live-action version of The Simpsons in terms of, like, the cutting to jokes and the style of humor. And I think it's just that this wonderful style of humor that the original writers of the show, you know, came up with, that we are the show today, keep sort of carrying this torch, has just infused everyone. And in terms of comedy, absolutely. And I think that, you know, in terms of other shows, it's just, I think that the whole TV landscape just helped open it up in terms of going for stuff that's a little more different or original or
edgy, even
trying to be something new.
Yeah, as a TV critic, do you agree with that, David?
Oh, I think it's not only kept itself going year after year, but it has influenced a lot of the humor and everything around it. The thing that baffles me around The Simpsons is that there's only one program, one cartoon in the whole history of television that's ever made it in the top 20 for a season, and it's not The Simpsons.
Oh.
As popular as The Simpsons is, it's never ended up in the top 20. The only one that ever has was one season of The Flintstones. And that's that's wrong.
Well, it is.
Well, I mean, in his defense, that was the season that had the Great Gazoo on it. And
wow.
I'm a huge Flintstones fan.
I'm telling you, Michael, between that and mentioning Fish Police, you really ought to be a TV critic, because I can't believe that even animators know this stuff. Wow.
Carmen, let me turn to you, because I'm actually looking. You teach a class at the UC Davis campus, and I'm looking at your class assignments here, and frankly, it's a class I would have loved to have taken. Simpsons and Religion, Simpsons and Politics, The Simpsons and the Road, The Simpsons and Infotainment, The Simpsons and Family, The Simpsons and Sexuality, The Simpsons and Education, The Simpsons and Self-Referentiality. I mean, you have really mined The Simpsons for what? The chance to talk about almost all things in life?
It is. I mean, I have a lot of students who are fans who take it, and then every once in a while I'll get students who want to take the class because their parents wouldn't let them watch the show, and then they get to come take my class and watch it for college credit.
How good is that?
Yeah. Sort of get back at their parents in this fabulous way. And then I've also had some students who are from other countries, and they see it as an entryway into American culture. It's a very exported show. And, I mean, I know that when I've traveled around, that I've had so many people in other countries connect over The Simpsons. When I go into stores in London, like little tourist shops, there are Simpsons stuff everywhere in London tourist shops, right next to all the Big Ben stuff. And, you know, so it's popular everywhere, and the students know that. But, yeah, we get to use the show to really think about American culture. You know, so for the politics unit, one of the episodes that I really like to do is Much Ado About Nothing, where they get upset because their taxes are high because they wanted a bear patrol, but then Mayor Quimby convinces them that their taxes are high because of illegal immigrants. And so they're going to pass this really draconian law, which is close to a California law that got passed a while ago. But what you have, of course, the students are really able to see right away that we're making fun of politicians, and then just takes that extra step to realize, of course, that it's the body politic itself that is the problem, that's letting itself be manipulated in this way. And so you have the satire working on those multiple levels, and it really allows us to talk about modern politics through this lens where the satire is exaggerating it so the student can really see it.
This is a very NPR type question to you, Michael Price, though, but do you see The Simpsons as apolitical, as having a political bent?
No, I don't. I think that we just sort of look for whatever is out there that's worth, you know, satirizing or having fun with. So even this episode that I mentioned previously about the fracking thing, there's Mr. Burns is very pro-fracking in it, and there's a character played by Jane Fonda, who's a sort of Nancy Pelosi-like liberal state assemblywoman who, you know, is on the other side. Mm-hmm. So I think in a way, you know, ultimately I think we do a lot about sort of the dangers of fracking, all the sort of water faucets on fire, which look very funny when they're animated. But we sort of come back on both sides in a way. Like, I think that we don't have a political bent per se, it's just a satirical bent.
To you, David, and this is maybe an unfair question. I mean, do you have a favorite episode or a favorite character?
I do. Well, my very favorite episode, because I'm a TV critic, is Itchy and Scratchy and Marge, where you end up having a cartoon character protest against the violence in TV cartoons. And it's so meta. It's so wonderful. And it reminds me, I called my son, who's now 30, and he was 5 when The Simpsons came out, and I had preview tapes and was showing them to him before it was on the air. And I said, what do you remember about seeing The Simpsons before it was on the air? And he laughed, and he goes, I remember wondering if the TV shows that they were watching on The Simpsons were real shows.
Oh, interesting.
You know, that he hadn't really worked that out. But if so, then Itchy and Scratchy must have really warped the hell out of my son. Because but what a great idea, because this show I mean, it isn't like you talk about being apolitical. You think that they're going to say, no, of course, violence is wonderful in cartoons. But they get the violence out of the cartoons. The cartoons are terrible. And so what the kids do is they turn off their TV sets and they go out while Beethoven's Pastoral is playing and they're all in the parks and it's wonderful, except then some other artwork comes to town and it shouldn't be censored. So I love The Simpsons, and that's my favorite show, favorite episode.
Your favorite episode, and that is David Bianculli, TV critic for Fresh Air with Terry Gross, founder and editor of TVWorthWatching.com. Also with us is Karma Waltonen, and she teaches a class at UC Davis called On The Simpson, and is co-author of a book called The Simpsons in the Classroom. And also joining us is Michael Price, and he is a writer, co-executive producer of The Simpsons, a job he's had since 2003. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Coaim. Karma, do you have a favorite character or episode?
It sometimes changes over time, but I think today my favorite episode is Lemon of Troy, where Bart graffitis a sidewalk and Marge tries to instill town pride in him. But that town pride, while it's welling up, sort of turns into sort of this nationalistic fervor because it becomes anger at the neighboring town, Shelbyville. And so then you get that the towns are very parallel in these wonderful ways, and the other town steals their lemon tree, and they have to go get it back, and then they have a Trojan horse scene to fulfill the title. But the episode is written really beautifully. All of the sort of references in the beginning come back, and I just absolutely love when Homer has, they've done the Trojan horse trick, and Homer says, "No one in history has ever done anything this cool." Because he doesn't get the reference.
Yeah. Of course. He's Homer Simpson. Michael, a variation on that question. Is there a character that has gotten the most attention? Is it Homer? Is it Bart? Is it the one that you think has gotten the most response, either positive or negative?
Well, I would have to say it's probably Homer. When the show began, I was just a fan. And I remember the phenomenon of sort of the Bart phenomenon at the beginning with all the T-shirts and everything. And I was actually just speaking last week to Jay Kogan, who was one of the original writers on the staff for the show. And he was talking about it a little bit because, the early focus of the show a lot was on Bart, and the sort of the early focus of the response was on Bart because he was so transgressive, and he said, eat my shorts, and he wore a T-shirt that said underachiever and proud of it, and it got people really upset, and it sort of took the world by storm. But then, the writers then sort of found that, Bart was fun to write for, but Homer was just such a joy, so easier in a way to write for because he was so, all the things you just mentioned, Karma, he's so kind of not very smart, but he's so passionate, he's full of conflicting emotions, and I think that's what happened is that they sort of had just a huge field day writing for Homer. And he is the father of the family, so to me, I think Homer is Homer is the show. I mean, the rest of the family is super important, but like Homer is the linchpin of everything.
Let me get
the character that I love the most.
Yeah, he's an amazing character. Let me get looks like Raphael from Germantown to join our conversation. Hi, Raphael. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, how you doing? I was just remembering one of the episodes that on The Simpsons where it lit up at the bottom. It said something like 40 years later, and you saw Bart and his father as an old, Homer's an old man, and they're sitting on a plaza bench, and Bart is like now a Supreme Court judge, and he's in the robe and everything, and I believe it's the only time that you ever saw Bart as an adult, and I just thought it was terrific that like he grew up to be like a Supreme Court judge after all the trials and tribulations he went through, and I don't believe he was ever seen as an adult again, but I'm not sure.
Yeah,
but I thought that was just one of the greatest scenes that like you could ever see.
Sure. Well, Raphael, let me give Michael a chance to respond to that.
Well, in the intervening 39 years or so of writing the show, we've had some other alternate futures for Bart that aren't as impressive as being a Supreme Court judge. We just did one. We tend to do future shows every once in a while, and so the last version of it, Bart was divorced and not doing well and living in the school. The school had turned into sort of these bad, low-rent apartments. He's living in his old classroom. But who knows? You know, for around for a few more years, we'll wind up again doing another one where he does something amazing in his future. So it's fun. That's sort of a fun way for us to sort of have some fun and sort of stretch our legs a little bit to sort of look at things going on, you know, some future aspects of the characters and stuff like that.
David, you've talked about the Treehouse of Horrors, the Halloween specials from The Simpsons.
I love those guys. You know, and I have to feel, we've got Michael right here so he can tell us, I would imagine that no matter how much fun it is to write The Simpsons in a regular episode, that being able to write one of those has to just put gas on that fire.
That's true, Michael?
Excuse me?
No, go ahead, Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting the way the show is written and produced is that the Halloween show, even though it tends to be one of the first shows aired in the season, is one of the last shows written in the writing season. So we always look forward to it. We always just have this huge amount of fun working on it because all bets are off. We can just have an incredible amount of fun and with, you know, horrible things happening to the characters and parodies of of movies and horror stories, and you're absolutely right, David. I mean, we just go just
totally bonkers,
really love and salivate to work on the Halloween show. It's always an incredible amount of fun.
Can you give us a hint about?
Oh, can you give us?
Can you give us a hint about?
Absolutely. This year's Halloween show.
Yes.
One of the big stories will be a full on retelling, well, I guess you could say, of A Clockwork Orange.
With
Homer, Lenny, and Carl, and Barney are the Droogs. I believe Homer is Alex, and Mo is part of it. Mo is one of the Droogs as well. So then, sort of.
And is it Duff Beer in the milk bar
in the background?
What is it?
I believe there's some Duff in there.
Yes.
And basically, our take on it is that they had been, you know, the young guys, and now they're old. Now they're Homer's age, and they sort of had hung up their droog hats and their cod pieces. And they sort of could pull back for one last chance to be droogs. You know, they invade a big house party being held by Mr. Burns, which I believe, unless it's been changed, I believe then turns into sort of a just all out kind of Kubrick fest with a kind of an Eyes Wide Shut party going on in there, and some Barry Lyndon and a little bit of Kubrick all just tossed in together like a big Kubrick blender towards the end of that sequence.
Can I just say that?
Go ahead, Carla.
One of the early Halloween episodes, Bart is actually dressed as the main character from the Clockwork Orange, and whenever I teach that one, I always tell the students that that, for me, is the most disturbing part of the episode, that you have a 10-year-old boy who's seen that film.
That's wild. Hold on, only because we have to take a very short break. That's Karma Walton, and she teaches a class on The Simpsons at UC Davis. Also with us, David Bianculli, TV critic for Fresh Air, and Michael Price, writer and co-executive producer of The Simpsons. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499 and playing some clips from the show as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Next time on The Pulse,
Fun Racks, man. Keep hot.
What happens when you're trying to create and you're just stuck?
It feels like, for a hot second, you're a fraud. That everything that you ever did was BS.
I can't force it.
Or could you?
Are you my subject?
Yes.
Okay, great. So if you could have a seat right here.
Shorting out the brain CEO to allow creativity to flow more freely?
Baseball bat. A crutch.
The Pulse, tomorrow morning at 9 on WHYY.
Great question. That is a great question.
And that's a great question.
Wow, that's another great question.
That's a great question.
Oh, that's a great that's a great question.
That is a great question.
What a great question.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear unexpected questions and unexpected answers.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
The
Islamic State gets the attention of the White House.
We will continue to confront this hateful terrorism and replace it with a sense of hope and civility. That's what Jim Foley stood for.
Considering a response to the execution on video of an American journalist, ISIS wants a war with America. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Today, the FXX Network begins its 276-hour-long marathon of every episode of The Simpsons ever. And today on the show, we're discussing the 25-year-old series, its impact on American culture, and why it merits such an expansive service. And again, David B. Cooley, Karma Waltonen, and Michael Price, our guests. I do want to play another clip from The Simpsons, and this is Terry Gross thanking Lisa Simpson.
This car is amazing. The radio lets me contribute directly to NPR.
This is Terry Gross from NPR saying thank you. Now let's get back to our 1987 interview with Senator Alan Cranston.
I never dreamed an American car designed in Germany, assembled in Mexico from parts made in Canada, could be so amazing.
Oh, that's so great. I guess NPR or PBS fundraisers are a big target at The Simpsons, yes. Michael Price.
Yes, yes. Well, it's sort of easy picking.
It is kind of easy picking.
No, I will hanging say this, though, if you want to look at some insight into the writer's room when we worked on that piece that fit with Terry, I'm sure we must have pitched on who her guest was for probably about an hour. I don't know who came up with Senator Alan Cranston. It might have been me, but I think we bandied many, 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 many names about who would have been a 1988 archive, interview by Terry.
Oh, that's so
we're
great.
We're all huge fans, of course. But, yeah.
Let me read an email comment here, and I'll give this to you, Karma. This is from McKinley, saying, I was born in 1989. I've literally grown up with The Simpsons. My brother at Homer's slippers and a Homer T-shirt. She goes on to say, my mom teaches a class on the Ten Commandments and always shows a clip from the episode Homer Steals Cables. Both she and her students look forward to the class. It's a wonderful show that our whole family can share in adulthood. Another note, I played the saxophone in fourth grade and felt a special connection with Lisa. But here's someone teaching a Bible class or a Ten mm-hmm. Commandment class and using something from The Simpsons. Not surprising, right, Karma?
Not at all. There was an article, I think it was in the Journal of Popular Culture several years ago, about the way The Simpsons actually handled all of their commandments at different times. And, of course, the show has gotten some backlash, especially in the early years, from religious people, but there's an article that I teach by Jerry Bauer who forbade his children from watching the show based on his Christian values, but then his children said, but would you watch it first? Because he hadn't watched it. And then once he watched it, he was converted, shall we say,
yes,
to The Simpsons, and actually argues that it's one of the most religious shows on TV because the entire community is involved in one kind of faith service that they go to every single week, which is actually not very representative of America anymore, that God, when he is shown, has five fingers instead of the Simpsons four, and that prayers get answered, and answered immediately, and that you also have characters grappling with religious questions. So, you know, Marge sometimes has difficulty accepting things, and she'll pray about it. Lisa finds problems in her faith when her church gets too commercialized, and she does a soul searching. So, yeah, I've heard of this show being not only used in classes that talk about religion, but in churches, in Sunday school groups. It's not surprising at all.
And David, and there's a character named Ned Flanders.
Oh, Ned Flanders is a wonderful character.
Yes.
And the whole episode where he tried to he took the Simpsons to Israel to expose them to the source of religions in the Holy Land. That was an absolutely brilliant episode, and I think that's definitely during Michael's tenure. So there was so much going on in that. But I'm a little disturbed by the idea that the God on The Simpsons didn't make The Simpsons in his image because he left off a finger.
What does that say?
I don't know. I'm a little confused by that. Just like my son was trying to figure out who, you know, is the TV in The Simpsons real?
Really on? Really on?
I'm not sure I believe in The Simpsons God.
Go ahead, Michael.
He wants to remind us all who's God and who isn't.
Exactly, especially in the world of The Simpsons. Let me get Gary from Huntington Valley to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Gary. Go ahead. You're on the air.
How are you?
Good.
There's one thing that I love to do when I'm watching The Simpsons is check out all the signs and billboards in the background. And, for example, there's one scene, and I don't remember what episode it is, when they're driving through Chinatown and they pass the Toys L Us. and I rolled on the floor for a good 10 minutes after I saw that one.
Toys Hell Us.
Yeah. It's just, you know, very subtle, but, you know, it catches you like a boomerang. It's like, wow. And there was one.
Well, I will tell you that.
Go ahead, Michael.
I'll let you go.
Okay, no, Gary, thanks for the call.
I was just saying that sometimes I'm asked that question by, you know, people around where I run into people who watch the show. We have amazing animators who did an incredible job on everything, but every single one of those signs is written by the writing staff. So we will spend, that's the time, that's where we'll spend hours and hours because, you know, when there's a church, the church marquee or the sign in front of the hospital or just any kind of name of a business, you know, that's where we really get sometimes run up against what have we not done yet. So we'll spend, you know, ungodly amounts of time just pitching on those signs to get them just right. So I'm really glad that you appreciate that.
Yeah, Gary, thanks. Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
And this is, again, something that makes me think of Mad Magazine because I used to read into the backgrounds of all those old panels. And I remember there was a whole suite of doors, and you had – it was glass, and you had – the words were backwards because you were looking at the back of it. So you had to actually – transpose it in your mind, but if you did, one of these doors said the Department of Redundancy Department. And I just think that is just brilliant. And it was buried in there, but I've never forgotten it.
Oh, that's great.
That is great.
Well, I'll also tell you that very quickly that, you know, we've entered the high def era of the show a few years back where all our shows are now, you know, broadcast in high def quality video. And so now, you know, in the olden days, if Homer was reading a newspaper article, if you look at the older shows, it'll be the kind of like scribble scrabble or kind of Greek writing, you know. But now, if they're reading a newspaper article or something like that, we have to write it. Because, you know, you can see it very clearly. So if you watch a show from the last 5 or 6 years and something like that is on, like that meant that one of our writers went off for like 2 hours to write that article and make it as funny as possible. You know?
That's great.
That is great.
Yeah, so we do a lot of extra work now.
and it certainly pays off. Let me get Fred from Cherry Hill to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Fred. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to comment on my favorite Simpsons show was one where Homer ate some sort of hot pepper and this whole hallucinogenic scene. And having reached adulthood in the late 60s, early 70s, I could kind of relate to that. And at the end of that episode, I was absolutely in pain from laughing so hard at that. That was just inspired. That whole scene was just absolutely wonderful. And thank you. Thank you very much for producing this show.
Well, yeah, you're very welcome. And obviously, thanks to Michael Price for being a co-executive producer of The Simpsons. I wonder, Carmen, using his example there, I mean, that you could use an episode like that, as hilarious as it is, to talk about all sorts of interesting drug-related issues.
Well, you get to talk about drugs in that one, and there's also a marijuana episode. But you can also talk, of course, about closeness and marriage. And, you know, spiritual journeys, because that's what Homer is doing in that episode, is he feels disconnected from Marge, and then his drug trip is actually this spiritual journey to get him back to her. And she's not on drugs, but takes a journey, physical one, to get back to him. And so, yeah, each episode has just this amazing, you know, amount of material that you can think about, and a lot of what we end up doing in the class is really teasing that out. One of my students noticed, for example, that whenever Homer is tempted by an adulterous situation and Marge deal with that. She gets very angry, she gets very defensive, she gets very protective, but the one time when Marge is tempted, Homer goes quiet, and he doesn't quite fight for her. And so the students were able to talk about, you know, is that because he feels that he doesn't really deserve this perfect, more perfect person than he is, and she does know that she deserves this happy marriage, and she's willing to fight for it. And so, you know, we can really get into things on these episodes that I'm sure the writers never intended us to spend hours doing.
Michael, if I can ask you, I sometimes, well, I don't know if worry is too strong a word, but I sometimes worry about Marge, that, you know, is she having enough fun? Does she have any friends? You know, she has to be the responsible one, it seems, certainly compared to her husband.
That's absolutely true. I mean, she holds the family together, that's for sure. I mean, we often talk about, like, what is the secret? You know, why did she stay with Homer?
Yeah, exactly.
And there are many, many theories, but I think ultimately she loves him, you know, for all his craziness and all the insane, irrational things he does. I mean, if you look at it, that's why I think the show could never be done as a live-action show, because, you know, Homer Simpson is, by all accounts, you know, an alcoholic, you know, who never goes to work, you know, who occasionally strangles his son. You know, it's certainly a, you know, funhouse mirror of marriage and a husband, but he ultimately has the heart that she just loves him so much and would never leave him. You know, we've done episodes where she's tempted, like Carmen was saying, but ultimately I think that's what sort of makes the linchpin of the show as well, is that after all this insanity, all the strangling and running around and getting drunk and whatever, you know, that they ultimately, the family just loves each other very, very much. And I think that's something that came from the very beginning of the show from our producer, James L. Brooks, you know, who's responsible for the Taxi and the Mary Tyler Moore Show in terms of endearment and broadcast news, that as crazy as the show could be and as funny and as satirical and as edgy, ultimately at the bottom of it all is just this family that just really, really loves each other and wants to stay together and make things work. And hopefully by the end of the episode, you know, we're sort of back to normal again, and next week they're going on another insane adventure.
Start all over again.
We'll all still love each other.
This is a perfect time to bring in our caller, David from Mount Airy. David, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi. So kind of preempted my question a little bit, but as somebody who grew up who wasn't allowed to watch The Three Stooges because it was too violent, and then having kids and so forth, I was going to comment on the level of values, or ultimately your heart, that's in there with all the great satire, and thinking about how the show was really criticized for being negative and so forth. Looking back on it, it really does strike me, especially as I get more Homer-esque, how much heart is in there too with the fun, and also, I mean, just the wild animation and stuff that is out there. You know, it's interesting to see how The Simpsons is different in some ways in that way. I thought maybe you could comment on that, although I think you already have.
I could say that, I'm sorry if I may speak.
No.
I think when the show began, it was this crucible of these three incredible talents that began the show. Matt Groening, who's based the family on his actual family members. You know, he came from an underground comics, you know, rock review critic kind of background, you know, child of the 60s, you know, sort of one of the, you know, subversive sort of mindset, you know, with this amazing comedy writer, Sam Simon, who had been, you know, doing, you know, sitcoms and great comedy shows for many, many years, and had a really eye for great writers, satirical writers like John Swartzwelder and George Meyer and Al Jean and Mike Reiss and John Beattie and Jake Hogan. And then Jim Brooks, who I mentioned before, was, you know, who everything he does is just full of heart, full of passion, just full of love for the characters. And I think if it had been one way or the other, sort of tipped one way or the other, it wouldn't have worked. And it just sort of combined together to be this sort of perfect combination.
Do you see it that way, David?
Absolutely. The Simpsons were actually a very real family at a time when on television sitcoms exaggeration was being played a lot by real, I mean, Married with Children was popular at about the same time. And, you know, The Simpsons were arguably a realer family, even though they were both satirical and were both trying to make their points and were both acting against the conventions that we have of the regular sitcom. But The Simpsons, it just like it never went too far with any one point of view politically, it never betrayed a single character. And it was like Jack Benny in the 50s, where characters wouldn't show up each week, but every time you saw Apu or you saw the bus driver or the comic book guy, you got into the town of Springfield, they became real people and real characters.
And Karma, we're almost out of time here, but I should say, just, you know, 25 years later, the Simpsons, they're all still together. They haven't aged, and they're all still together.
Yep. They are, and I mean, I think that the current show, Bob's Burgers, I feel is sort of the closest inheritor of that spirit, because that family is also really loving, where I feel like a lot of the other cartoons that have tried to imitate the Simpsons, the characters, most of them aren't nice deep down, and they don't care about each other in the same way. I mean, if you watch the family dynamics on Family Guy, they're very different. You don't get that underlying sense that this is a family that does actually care about each other. It's much more Married with Children energy in that family, where they insult each other all the time, verbally abuse each other. And, you know, you can watch Peter Griffin verbally and physically abusing his daughter for laughs. Homer, when he hurts Lisa, it's unintentional.
Well,
he realizes what he's done, he makes amends.
I hate to do this because we have to end our conversation. My thanks to you, Karma Walton, and thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. David B. and Cooley, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Michael Price, thank you very much for being on the show and also for The Simpsons as well.
Oh, well, thank you. It was a huge thrill.
It was a thrill for us as well. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show, it's produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.